So here we go. It's the fourth day of this very intensive week. Glad to still see the strongest survivors here online, and I hope there will be more popping up as well. So today, our topic of the digital competencies is empowering the students, and we will concentrate on accessibility. And I will be warning you, I have a lot of lot to say about this topic, but I have a slide to show for you, but I am not going to go through every sentence on each slide. It's more like a material package for you for the later use as well. But there are things that I want to kind of raise the ideas and give you input, so if you get interested in these topics, then you will know where to gather more information. And in the morning session, I will provide you information about accessibility, and we will have an interactive session, and depending on how much time we need for the interactive session, we will continue it after the lunch break, at least with the kind of opening up what you have been doing during this interactive session. So it will, this accessibility topic will continue to the afternoon session after the lunch as well. And then we have a very important topic as well, next steps and closing remarks. And we will have short break, of course, during the morning session and also during the afternoon session. So these are the steps for today, and welcome on board those who came in while I was speaking. Happy to see you here. So now I will share you my ideas of accessibility, what it means for a student to not be able to kind of fully participate in the teaching. Ja nyt jos mä vainan kielen suomeksi, niin kauhean moni ei ymmärrä, mitä mä puhun. Voi olla sujuva suomi tai vähemmän sujuva suomi, mutta ei ihan tiedä, että mistä tänään tullaan puhumaan. So these are the topics I'm going to talk to you today, and I hope you will remember everything that I just told you. And now that you are too polite to tell me that you couldn't understand me or hear me well, I will start this presentation again in a bit more accessible mode. I just wanted to demonstrate you a light experience of being a student with special educational needs and disabilities in online learning. So first you could not hear me that well, then you could not understand because I was speaking Finnish, and then you couldn't really read my slides due to insufficient contrast between text and background, but you were too polite to tell me that, oh, I can't really see what you have written there. So let's start again. So today's topic is accessibility, and one important point is already in the title. Accessibility benefits all. I will justify this for you in this presentation. And I will share you practical tips how to improve the accessibility of your learning materials. And here is the content now without, with a bit better contrast without the background image there. So what is accessibility and why is it important for us? And I will very shortly introduce you a pedagogical framework called Universal Design for Learning, UDL. And then I will share you examples of typical flaws and tell you practical tips how to avoid them, how to improve the accessibility. And as I already told you, I will not go through every slide in this material package, which I will share with you in Moodle, but I want to more kind of give you input and raise thoughts and ideas about accessibility in online learning. And please feel free to interrupt me, ask questions, comment if something comes to your mind. You may already have some experiences on this topic. But to shortly start with what DigComp Edu framework says about empowering learners, about accessibility and inclusion. That's one topic under this empowering learners area. So the aim is to ensure accessibility to learning resources and activities for all learners, including those with special needs. And this is a kind of wide area because we need to respond to learners' digital expectations, abilities, uses, and misconceptions as well as contextual, physical, or cognitive constraints to their use of digital technologies. And of course, accessibility in such is a wide area, not restricted to digital world, but in this training of digital competencies, we will have a better look at the digital accessibility. But this is the question, why is it relevant and timely? Why are we actually using all this time to discuss this topic? Well, of course, digital services and learning environments are rapidly becoming more widespread and varied. And of course, we all know what happened 2 years ago when we had to jump to digital mode on teaching and learning due to COVID-19 pandemic. So that was the point where many teachers were really not prepared, or they had to, for example, if they were used to give very hands-on teaching like art teachers or sport teachers, for example, they had to find new ways to teach online, something that they had not necessarily done before. Studies in online environments, they have, of course, opportunities, but also sort of challenges. They, of course, create new flexible study opportunities for students, but these digital environments may become barriers if they're not accessible and if their learning materials there and activities are not accessible for all students. And accessibility of digital services, it's not only ethically important or desirable, but it's also something that the law demands us to take care of. There's in the European Union, there's this directive on the accessibility of mobile applications of public sector bodies, which also concerns higher education institutions and libraries. So we need to do this. And so when new digital services are developed and deployed, it's crucial to incorporate accessibility right from the start, because you cannot, this is something that has to be in when you design systems or when you design your learning materials. It's something that you just cannot add afterwards when you realize that this is not now accessible. But don't worry, even if I'm now kind of starting with the law and telling the kind of demanding you to care about this topic, it's not that difficult after all. And you may have already been doing things in a good accessible way even without really noticing it. But let me tell you more. So when we talk about digital accessibility, it concerns the content, meaning when you provide learning materials, it concerns the content. It must be built in such a way that anyone can use them and comprehend what is said. So this is important, that it's also the content, how you say things, that it's also part of the accessibility. And then when we provide the materials, for example, when we build a course in Moodle, we need to ensure that students who use, for example, assistive technologies such as screen readers, which is a software for visually impaired people who cannot see the screen. So the screen reader is a software that reads the text content or every content in the text mode allowed. and all kinds of devices. So for example, when we think about the students nowadays, more and more of them are using mobile phones or tablets to access digital learning platforms, for example. So that's also one part of the accessibility. And this is something that I often face when I discuss this topic with the teachers. There is a difference between access and accessibility. Teachers, sometimes they tell me that, yes, I have shared my materials online, so there they are, students have access to them, they are now accessible. But no, it's not the same thing. If we think about the physical world, the real world, like in this photo here, we have the doors that are wide open, but right behind the door, there are very, very deep stairs going upstairs. So for now, we could think that, yes, there is the access to the house, but actually the room upstairs, it's not accessible because, for example, elderly people who cannot climb those stairs or someone using a wheelchair could not access the house. So it's the same thing in the digital world. If you put the materials online, well, yes, students may then have the access there, but if they're not accessible, and I will shortly tell you more what it means, it's not the same thing. For example, if there are videos and they are not captioned and someone who cannot hear well or does not understand the language well, then the video is not accessible for him. And this is an important message. If there's nothing else you would remember of my lecture today, please remember this, that accessibility benefits everyone. It improves quality, usability, user experience, learning experience of everyone, because when you make the materials accessible, you usually kind of think and rethink and design and redesign the material, prepare it well. And also, we are not thinking kind of small minorities of students. That's something important to understand, because the point is, we don't usually know our students that well. I know some of you discuss in the small breakout groups that you know even too well, but if we think about those teachers facing 200 students in the mass lectures in the auditoriums, they really don't know. So what we see is something. We see behavior. We may misinterpret the behavior. We think we see the gender. That's not that clear nowadays either. Language and acts. But this is like the iceberg, that there is so much under the surface that we don't see or know unless they are shared with us, like values or physical abilities or disabilities or something like cultural issues that affect to your learning. For example, if you have a female student who cannot do group work with male students due to restrictions of the religion, you can't know that beforehand if it's not shared with you. And also, there is no such a thing as an average learner, because sometimes teachers say, well, I know my students, they're all this and that, and no one has any special needs. But we cannot know unless it's revealed to us. They may have different experiences, for example, or preferences or strengths. So there is no such thing as an average learner. And this is something I want to point out, that many students actually face learning challenges. If we look at the numbers in the European Union level, and it's around 80 million people in the European Union that are affected by a disability in some degree. And this is we need accessibility to make sure that they have equal participation in the society. And you might think that people with special educational needs and disabilities, they may not enter higher education studies, but yes, they do. depending on the studies, the number is something between 8 to 14 persons in these studies made in USA, UK, and Finland with the students with special educational needs and disabilities. And I also want to point out something from the studies that some of these students actually find out, for example, if they're not very, if they're dyslexic, for example, find this out after entering the higher education studies because they have managed their studies in the previous education. But suddenly when you enter like a university and you have to read much more, the amount of literature you need to read and learn and understand, and for example, in a foreign language, it raises. So they may realize then that they actually have some special needs. And also this lifelong learning, which is a growing area, it brings new challenges because there are people from like elderly people also come to higher education studies. They may have some needs of their own. And also these temporary restrictions, as in one of these images, someone has a broken wrist. These disabilities and special educational needs, they may be temporary. Or for example, if you're very allergic and you cannot really come to the campus area in the springtime, but all other times of the year it's fine, or the medication doesn't help in the springtime, or for example, these sick building syndromes that students can enter some buildings of the campus area, but not all if the buildings are not healthy. So this may be temporary, and this may be something that you really can't see when you meet the student face to face. And also this young lady in the corner, I want to point out also these sort of social restrictions. If you feel stressed when you have to meet new people or give a presentation in front of others, or if you, there are many students with different kinds of mental problems, depressed or whatever. And I think this pandemic time, this is now my gut feeling. I'm sure there will be a lot of research of this. But anyway, I think this pandemic time, it has been a benefit for some students, but I think this sort of isolation and social isolation and loneliness has created a lot of stress and mental problems for students, and something that then we can't even know, because if they are behind the closed web cameras and never open their mic, then we have no idea how they're doing. Any comments on this? Do you have any experiences? I want to point out something.
Yeah, one thing. I was thinking about some people that live in island, for example, in Sicily. We have a lot of little island around Sicily, and then people that live there is in some cases impossible to reach Palermo, for example, or other city. And then the possibility to have online learning is an advantage for these people.
Yes. Yes.
I was thinking about this.
Yeah, absolutely. And for example, I know students who use a wheelchair and or need a personal assistant to come to the campus to study. It's much more easier for them. They don't have to organize a taxi, for example, or a ride and this assistance when they can participate this online teaching at home. Or this, like you just brought up this example of people living in different kind of conditions. So yes, it is sometimes things that we don't even think about. And then this online education provides them an opportunity to participate in lectures and study. Yes. Thank you, Aldo. And then I will give you a short demonstration, because usually us, if we see okay and read fine and hear fine, then it's kind of hard to understand what it means to be a person with special needs. So I will shortly demonstrate you how do your students experience your documents and websites if they have some issues. And first I will demonstrate two simulators. The first one is called Funkify Disability Simulator, and it's developed by accessibility specialists as well as people with disabilities. So this is really, there's a lot of experience behind this. And I will show you how it works. This works in the web browser, and this is a software that you can get for a few days for free, kind of free trial for a couple of days with all the functions. And then if you don't want to pay for it, then you will have some functions of it. So not the whole package, but some features available for you. But I now have the license to this, so I will show you some interesting functions of it. And what is the idea? If this can simulate you some disabilities. And let me show it to you. I will show you a few personas. So the idea is that here are persona sort of user profiles built here. For example, Blurry Bianca experiences blurry vision, so she cannot see very well. Color Carl has several color blindnesses, and Dyslexia Danny. I will show you how Dyslexia Danny would experience this for the web page. But let me demonstrate you now. Well, for example, Blurry Bianca. When you use the simulator, you can choose the severity of the disability, for example, intensity of blur, but let's put it quite mild. And then it informs you that about 4% of people have a vision impairment, and about 60%, including me, wear glasses or contact lenses. So this is how foggy this web page or a PowerPoint presentation in an auditorium looks like if you can't see properly. This was now Blurry Bianca. And Color Carl has, we can try several color blindnesses. And I want to point out this red and green color blindness, deuteranopia, however it's pronounced. It is quite common. 1% of men have this, and one woman in 300 has this. So this means practically that if you, as I will demonstrate to you later, how we sometimes use color coding to tell, for example, what answer is correct, it's green, and what is wrong is then red. These people cannot detect these colors. They look the same. Now, these forum pages are quite accessible. So what we now saw with Color Call is that the color of this banner image changed. But this is now something I want to show you. I will zoom in so you can see the letters better. Because, for example, us usually who have a higher education and especially who do academic career in higher education, we are quite fluent in reading. But then more and more students enter higher education who have some difficulties in reading. So now I will demonstrate you how Dyslexia Danny would experience this text. Look at the letters, what happens to them. And try to read. So the letters started to dance If this text was in my mother tongue, I might be, if I concentrated it really hard, I might be able to guess what it says, but it would be very slow, it would be very exhausting, and I probably wouldn't remember much because it takes so much effort. So I think this is an excellent demonstration of something that I might not be able to understand what it takes of a student. And for example, one hint to how to help a student with dyslexia would be to offer, for example, articles or electronic e-books in the mode that they can listen to the text. I know some publishers already, because in this, for example, in the States and in Britain, this accessibility movement is much kind of forward. So publishers based on these countries, some of them already offer this possibility to listen to the text. So this would make their life easier, listening to the text, not only reading. But then, yet again, I must say that on some I know there are scientists from chemistry here listening to us. In some, especially natural sciences, we already know that it, for example, when you have those, you have to count something, or you have very, very long sentences with numbers and letters only, it's very hard to remember those. So that is. In the sense of accessibility, these natural sciences and mathematics, they are very hard disciplines for those who cannot see well, or if you are dyslexic, because it makes it difficult. It's hard to hear, listen, and remember those formulas long enough to be able to kind of understand. So, but this is an interesting little add-in in the web browser, and then I will show you another one called No Coffee Vision Simulator, and this is now free of charge. If you get interested in this you can get to Firefox, and the idea of this simulator is to simulate several problems with vision. For example, this blurry, as we already noted, so in the Funkify. But for example, should I find another page? Because this is now nice contrast here at this page. So you can see that if I put this contrast loss, I can read this quite well. But for example, let's see how our university's homepage would work. Go Uvascular, let's see how accessible it is. Let's take the English one. If I take this contrast loss, let's take open one page from here. So if I take this contrast loss, oh, this was a nice page as well. Sorry, we are doing too well. Let's go back here. But let me demonstrate how this contrast loss would look at this page. Can't see much changing. So as you see, if you have black, or as we have very, very dark blue text on the white background, there's enough contrast. But on some other pages, or for example here, when we have white text on the dark blue background, it already kind of affects it. And then, for example, I once had a colleague working in a project. He was a student, and he has this nystagmus, which means that there are uncontrollable rapid eye movements, which makes it hard for him to see things clearly. So this also demonstrates those. Or if you have some issues in your visual field, some blocked visual field, if it's central or peripheral or corner or side, or if you have these floaters, that there are something kind of floating in your visual field. So This is interesting. You can get this for free. It's called No Coffee Vision Simulate. And why I specifically wanted to show you this is that in higher education, we very much share visual information. We provide slides and kind of want to think that all students see as well. And as I mentioned, that we are reading a lot, and kind of students also need to read a lot. And then if you have any trouble like this, it affects your performance. And then I take this to a bit higher level. I will share you briefly lessons learned in European higher education institutions networks. And I'm not going to use our time to these projects more than that, but these first two ones, this Tesla, not the car, Tesla project and TNL, they were international projects with many higher education institutions, and accessibility was a crucial part of them. And then this DigiCampus was a national project with many sub-projects, and accessibility was one of them. But these next 3 points are something that we learned in these projects and networks. And this might feel self-evident, but it's actually not. But higher education institutions need a clear strategy and policies for accessibility. You need systematic effort to gain accessibility. It doesn't happen accidentally. And also, it's crucial to enhance the transparency and active participation of students in policymaking, but because they are the ones that we are making things for, and we need to hear their voice and their needs, what they do need. So this is something, if you don't have the strategy and policy for this, and you don't manage and lead and put energy and effort to this, it won't happen. And then this is something that I want to also point out, because accessibility applies to all staff. Lisa and I come from the IT services, IT unit, and very often teachers kind of think that it's something that you can outsource to IT, but it's not. As I told you, it's something that you have to have it in your mind in the beginning, right from the beginning. It's something that you cannot add afterwards. So for example, library, they need to know what kind of materials they are buying, what kind of electronic books, for example, they are sharing. And then of course, instructors and lecturers, of course, but also educational development services, what kind of support system you have. Because for example, here in Jyväskylä University, students with special education needs and disabilities, they contact a contact person and tell their needs, and then we make a paper of the individual arrangements that would help this student's life, and then they can take this paper to their teachers and tell that they need this and that. And that why it is made this way, the reason for it is that we cannot ask the students when they enter the university. It's up to the students to inform the staff of their needs. So we don't have a register saying that Paul cannot see well and Mary needs a wheelchair and needs special arrangements. If the students don't reveal this information, then we will not know, and we cannot help them, and we cannot prepare for this. And then, as I already mentioned, we often think, teachers think that, yes, we know the students and they're all 100% average students, but they may not be. So for example, students perceive and learn information in different ways. And there are students with physical limitations. For example, a concrete example, if you are creating an activity or a test in Moodle where you have to drag and drop with kind of using a mouse with the cursor, the right correct answers, and someone is not able to use the mouse but is using computer with a keyboard, then won't happen. But how could you know if the student does not inform you beforehand? And then we have students with dyslexia or learning disabilities, and this is a growing number of students in higher education. It doesn't necessarily mean that there are more of these challenges nowadays, but it may also mean that students are now kind of more open to reveal this, or we know more of this. They are talked about, so students know that, can kind of seek for support. Already mentioned students with mental health challenges, and especially during the lockdown, I think this has been quite a growing number as well. We have adult learners with families, cognitive load, not as much time needed for used to studies as needed. We have part-time students, and also including lifelong learning students. And then we have international students from different cultures. And as I mentioned in the example of the female student not being able to do group work with male students, these are things that we may not know if they don't reveal it to us. And this is what the studies say. It's the majority of the students who choose not to disclose their disability and request for accommodations. And the most general reasons for that are the following ones. A lack of understanding on how to access services available. If they don't know, if no one has ever told them that there is this possibility for individual arrangements, for example, or help and support, then how would you know? And of course, they may be unprepared or intimidated to interact with faculty on a personal level. Yesterday, we discussed this interaction, I mentioned this safety and mutual trust. So this is something very crucial for this topic as well, because if students feel that they kind of have to reveal their vulnerability or kind of like the next point says, they are fear of getting a stigma or label, then we cannot really help and support them. But for some students with special needs, they desire for a new beginning without being labeled. And in online learning, this is specifically true because in internet, nobody knows you're a cat, or in internet, nobody knows what your special needs are unless you reveal them yourself. So there are actually many students with special educational needs and disabilities, they prefer online studies because they can kind of, they can choose if they want to reveal their special needs. And of course, this is very, very understandable, the fear of being considered incapable by peers and faculty. This is a kind of stigma that they are worried about. But now that I have raised all these concerns and worries and uncertainty, what is the answer? Well, ask your students, provide them an opportunity, invite them to share their needs with trust and sensitivity, try to create the atmosphere of the mutual trust. And then it is up to them. But anyway, they are experts in their own learning. So give them a chance. Let them know that you are open and want to know. But then, after all, it is their decision unless there is any official register or system, how word of mouth that would then tell about their specific needs. Any comments at this point? If not, then I will very lightly touch this pedagogical framework called Universal Design for Learning, and then we will go to practical tips that I promised you. So this is one pedagogical framework, kind of why, what, and how of learning that might be interesting for someone, but I will do this very, very briefly. But it has guidelines which offer a set of concrete suggestions that can be applied to any discipline or domain to ensure that all learners can access and participate studies. And the main idea is, this comes back to the social model of disabilities, which say that it's the environment that is not functioning, not the person's abilities or disabilities. So universal design for learning is a framework to guide the design of learning environments in the way that they are accessible for all. So the opposite would be to create all sort of special arrangements for people with special needs, but it's always the easiest way to kind of provide materials and environments that are already accessible. And the idea is to provide all students an equal opportunity to succeed. And UDL wants to support learners to become expert learners and aims to change the design of the environment rather than to change the learner. So this is the kind of key idea. We provide the environments and materials that support all various kinds of learners' learning. And in practice, there are these few, there are more concrete guidelines as well, but this is like the top five ideas, is that we should provide physical and digital learning environments that are accessible, environments, services, and communication that are accessible. And number two is presenting content and information in multiple media and providing varied support for the learners. And then providing diverse study materials that are accessible. And for example, of a concrete example of this would be one teacher who shared the PDF papers, like the articles for the students in Moodle, but then she also had made short audio recordings of each article, kind of summarizing the main ideas, which was an excellent service for the students. But then students were happy because then you can kind of also, if you're jogging, you can listen to these audio recordings or video recordings, or if you're doing something else that you kind of, if you learn better by listening than just reading. But this would be like an example of providing diverse study materials. And then, of course, alternative ways of completing studies. And then flexibility and individual arrangements if necessary. So there's this big ideological difference between the thinking that we provide kind of something, and then if someone needs accessible special arrangements, then we do some modifications. But if we in UDL, you do already your materials and course as accessible as possible, and then you don't need to do these specifications. But this is more like a touch of this UDL framework if someone gets interested in this pedagogical framework. But now, let's get to the practical tips and what you can do. These are now examples of typical accessibility issues, and I will tell you how to avoid and fix them. And these examples now apply to any kind of content, such as PowerPoint presentations or Moodle courses or web pages or Word documents or PDF documents. So these are more like the principles of these issues. And I will go this also quite fast. Don't worry, you have the recording and you have the material, so you can get back to them. But I want to be able to present you some of these tips. Well, to begin with, unclear hyperlink text means that you copy paste the link as such. And my favorite horrid example are the links you get from Microsoft Teams, because they are like six rows long and just a mess. And why they are problematic? Well, for people who can see, if I look at this link, I have no idea where it's taking me. And for the people who cannot see, the poor screen reader software starts reading this link letter by letter, HTTPS and so on. And it takes 3 minutes and the person still doesn't know where it's taking taking him. So this would be a terrible way to do. Assignments, instructions, and timetables are here, and then you just provide the links. But then, how to do it correct? Use descriptive wording for the hyperlink text. This is very easy, and this is something that when you just know how to do it correctly, it's easy to change your habit. And don't use these click here links. You often know or see that timetables can be found here. But just use the word timetable, use the word instructions, use the word assignments to point where the what is behind the hyperlinks. And it's a good way to inform the user if the hyperlink takes you to, for example, to a Word document or PDF, if you inform the user of the file type. Because, for example, then mobile users may know that, oops, I cannot open Word document with this device, so I will get back to this later. And these click here links, why are they problematic? Because you see them very much. Again, if we get back to the screen reader users, they use a lot of shortcuts when they navigate at the pages. So if they know that there somewhere should be a link with the timetables, if they browse the links, they only find 10 to 12 here, click here links instead of the hyperlink saying timetable. So please make everyone's life easier and use the descriptive wording for the hyperlink text. Easy to do just when you know it. Then next issue, poor or missing title. There are some other issues here, using unclear, indistinct font, or using too small font size, because I know academics very often want to be clear and they copy paste a lot of text to one slide, for example, and then the font size is something like 7 and you need a magnifier to read it. So make sure that you use a sufficient font size and as clear a font as possible. These should be fine in the organizational slide templates, but it's not necessarily so. If the organization's slide templates are not made accessible, then they may have these problems as well. But anyway, how to correct this? Write descriptive headings, prefer sentences rather than words, and use fonts that are easy to read and a sufficient font size. And why is it a problem if there is no title at the slides, for example, or if this applies to Word, for example, as well? If you don't make the headings to the style headings, well, once again, we get back to the screen reader users. They can navigate a document in the kind of searching for the headings. And if you have not used the headings, if the heading is not a heading, but you have just made the font bigger and used bolding, then it's not a structured heading, and then the screen reader cannot navigate there. So use built-in designs or layouts, and use, once again, a larger font size and also contrast. Then I already mentioned this earlier in this presentation. This is an example of using color as the only visual mean of conveying information. And this is problematic. Now this, as I said, that 1% of men cannot detect red and green, then they would be in trouble with this slide. Because now the idea is that the correct ones are in green and the wrong ones in red, but doesn't work if you cannot detect the colors. And also we have to remember, once again, these mobile users who may be in bright sunshine checking their tablet or phone, and in the bright sunshine you really need the contrast to be able to read the text. So how to do this properly? You could, for example, these are now examples, but this would be one way. Using these titles true, using the title false. Of course, you can use this kind of check marks as well, but these are sometimes culturally interpreted different ways. So So this sign check here could be correct or it could be wrong. So be careful with symbols as well. Yes, so you few words more of using colors. I already mentioned the cultural differences in symbols, but we also know there are some cultural differences in interpreting colors as well, and cultural and learned meanings of colors. Usually we in the digital world, we think that green is go and red is no-go kind of traffic lights symbol. So if you want to put, for example, create a save button, then don't put it red because it might look like don't click me. But there are many culturally loaded symbols and colors as well. And regarding colors, consider adequate contrast between text and backgrounds. This I already demonstrated you in the beginning of the presentation, but yes, go ahead. Try to read what I have written here. This is something that is kind of a trend nowadays to use very colorful images behind the slides. That's okay if you just make sure that you can still read the text. For example, with this slide, I would then use a background color for these text boxes. But now I help you to read the content of the slide. So sufficient contrast benefits everyone, but especially those with low vision and mobile users with their small screens and in varying lighting conditions. And I must say, brand colors are not always accessible. As I mentioned, that these organizations' slide templates, they should be accessible, but they are always not. My favorite example is one organization whose brand colors were white and yellow, and then their slides were the text was on yellow on the white background. Nobody could read them. And there are free of charge tools for analyzing color contrast if you can't tell it yourself. Of course, black text on white background and vice versa is very safe, but it's not the only option. But these color contrast analyzers you can use. And then bear with me, we are getting near the end of the presentation, a few more points. Missing alternative texts. And what is a text alternative? It's something that helps people who cannot see the screen or the content to understand what is important in images and other visuals. And it's something that you provide, you write to each image. Because if there is no alternative text, once again, users with the screen readers reading the content aloud, the screen reader will inform that there is a picture, but it cannot tell anything of the content. So how to do it right? Briefly describe the idea and the intent of the image to the specific box of the alternative text. For example, in office programs, when you right-click the image, there's alt text, and then you write something there. And it's the idea of the image. So remember to include them with all visuals. And if you like using decorative images, like here is an example of the rose, there's also a box you can tick if the image is decorative, so it has no information to provide, it's just for fun, then the screen reader will skip this image and not bother the user of it. And you don't have to write the alternative text. And I'm warning you, office programs have this nice feature of providing, like AI provides you the alternative text, but usually they are not good. So don't trust them and at least check them, because they would just say, like in like the picture of the image of the brain here, for example, it might say brain and that's it. But what we would like to tell the user, it's the structure of the brain starting from frontal lobe, going to occipital lobe, so on. So it's the idea of the image that we want to tell the user. And there is something in these office programs to help you in detecting the accessibility of your documents and slideshows. And I have provided here you now a checklist of these issues that I have told you. And there is this accessibility checker in Office programs, which is there available for free and automatically. And it's useful for finding common accessibility issues. And it provides you a report. There's an example at the right side of the slides, what kind of reports it provides. And it's good because it tells you why you should fix, why is this a problem, why to fix it, and how to fix it step by step. But I must warn you that it does not detect all problems. So if this accessibility checker tells you that there are no errors or warnings anymore, it doesn't still mean that it's perfectly fine and accessible. And now I will not use our time to demonstrate this, but I have already made you a 20 minutes demonstration of how to use Office Checker, and it's available at this day's videos, and you will find the link in Moodle. So please check that video because it's really easy and hands-on, and it already helps you to take kind of main errors, main accessibility issues away and fix them. And just a few words, we will soon have a break. Just one point of accessible PDFs, because I now know many of you are thinking, but I never share my PowerPoints, I always share them as PDFs. Well, that's okay, that's perfectly fine, but still, the first step to make accessible PDF files is to start with the source document. So that's why you have to make your PowerPoint slides first accessible, and then you create a PDF. And there's also a very important thing in creating a PDF that don't use this printing function, because it may create the PDF as an image and then the screen reader is not able to access the content. It's not text, it's an image, and it cannot read it. So for example, if you're sharing articles to your students, like from scientific journals, if there are old papers then back in the old times, they used to upload the PDFs or provide the PDFs as images, and then screen reader cannot access the content, or it has to do some scanning, and you need to do specific scanning, and it may not success 100%. But nowadays there are text, so the screen readers can access them. And there are some softwares also to check the accessibility of the PDF files. And very shortly before I give you the very well-earned break, because now I have been talking quite a long about video and audio recordings, just few points. Captions improve the accessibility of the videos. And it's not only people who cannot hear well, but for example, if you have weak language skills, or you have learning difficulties, or you're on a train and would like to check the teacher's newest video, but you don't have no headphones on, or there's background noise, kids yelling at the same cabin, then when you have the captions, then you can still follow the video. There are three ways to produce captions: either manually, which is very time-consuming, or using automatic speech recognition, ASR, which is developing very well and fast nowadays, and the hybrid model, which I usually recommend. First use the automatic speech recognition and then check the main errors, and then you save a lot of time. And this is as a tip for you if you want to produce videos and you know they will be captioned. Use a good microphone for the audio. Like headset is very good. That's perfect, because then your mouth is very near to the microphone. Don't use the laptop's microphone. Their audio is not good. The human brain may understand, but the if you are using the automatic speech recognition, it usually doesn't work with the laptop. The audio quality is very important here. And it's not the, you can speak fast, that's okay, but usually the faster we speak, the more unclear we articulate, and then the automatic speech recognition may not follow your talking very well. It may not work very well. And now I will get to the very last slide before I give you the break. Just a few words of assistive technologies, because this is now very interesting. In the older, or not that long ago actually, if you needed some specific tools, like for example screen readers, they were something expensive and extra that you needed to buy. But nowadays, these devices and even these mobile consumer devices, they already have built-in AT assistive technology features, which are easy to use. And for example, if you are using a Windows computer, you can find the Microsoft accessibility tools like magnifier, or you can add contrast or use color filters. And these speech to text, where you can dictate or use captioning with AI technology. For example, in Teams, you can use this real-time live captioning with several languages, or text-to-speech if you want to kind of test this screen reading, or if you would like to listen to students' essays instead of always reading them, then there are many possibilities to this. But as I told you, I now wanted to give you a kind of lot of input and a lot of information where you, according to your specific needs, then might know where to find more information. Any questions at this point, now that I have been talking for, having this monologue for 1 hour? Any questions or comments? I hope you're still awake. Yes, at least someone is there. I know a lot of information, but as I said, this is more like a kind of material package for you to also familiarize you with later on. So now this was the kind of information load that I now gave to you. And we will have a short break to get a cup of coffee or tea or whatever you want to do. And then after the break, I will introduce you the small group working, and you will get the chance to kind of discuss these accessibility issues and get do practical ideas on how to help students with special needs. And I hope that what we will do in Mural will be for help for you later situations in case your students need special support. Mm-hmm. Yes. So I shared you the Mural link in the chat, and I will soon divide you to two small groups to breakout rooms, and I will provide you two students per group. I have 5 cases here, but let's concentrate in this two students per group now. Mm-hmm. And I will introduce you the students. So first we have here is Jan. He has difficulties in concentrating, and he also has mild dyslexia, so difficulties with reading. And with all these student cases, there is this framework where you can then add hints and tips and ideas how to support this student. I have now made this division of like tips concerning communication, interaction and guidance, and organizing the teaching, including working methods and tools and methods for completing the course. If we get back to the assessment and what we learned yesterday, and then other ideas and ideas concerning the pedagogical design of the course. Any other ideas that you get? And of course, feel free to add, if you think about any other perspective of you, then just add here. And as we have done in the previous days, you just add these sticky notes to and write text here. So the first group will have Jan, who has difficulties in concentrating and also mild dyslexia, and also Anna, who is next to Jan here. Anna is a 22-year-old student with visual impairment, and she uses her computer with a screen reader and keyboard, so cannot use the mouse. And here is the same framework: communication, interaction and guidance, organizing the teaching, methods for completing the course, what kind of assessment you could use, and then these other ideas slots. So first group will have Anna and Jan, and the second group will have Sophia, who has, she is hard of hearing and her mother tongue is sign language. And once again, the same framework here. Ideas how to communicate with her.
Sorry, can you repeat the Sophia characteristics?
Yeah, she has, it's you can read it here. She cannot hear well.
Okay.
Her mother tongue is sign language, so yeah.
Mother tongue, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
So you cannot communicate with her speaking. She cannot hear you and she doesn't speak. So that's the case with this Sophia. And then we have Sam. He has a social anxiety disorder and panic disorder. He finds all group situations very uncomfortable, and therefore giving presentations in front of others is extremely stressful for him. And once again, the same framework here. And I also had this fifth student here, but we will now skip him because we have now people for two groups. Not because Harry's problems would be any less important, no, but because now we concentrate more on the digital issues. But as I, as with my presentation also pointed out, it's kind of hard to distinguish with this digital world and physical world issues. So, but anyway, this fifth character would have been Harry, who uses a wheelchair, needs assistance to move around, and suffers from sick building syndrome in all other university buildings except the newest one. But Harry would be now an excellent example of a student who might actually benefit of hybrid teaching and online learning possibilities, because it would make his everyday life easier. It's easier to participate the lectures when you don't need to organize a ride and a personal assist. But I will name your groups with these characters' names, so don't worry if you didn't catch or don't remember which characters to do. But group number one is Jan and Anna. You take care of these two students at the post-it sticky notes there. And group number two is Sophia and Sam. So Jan and Anna, and group number two is Sophia and Sam. And you will have time till 11, and then we start a lunch break. If you finish earlier, you can start the break earlier. And me and Steffi and Lisa will be visiting you in these groups, but otherwise discuss as a group and add the notes there when you get ideas. And if you get completely stuck, then please call for help and we will come and support you there. Any questions?
Yes. So, which group do I belong to?
You belong to group number one, Jan and Anna, but you will find out when I open the breakout rooms. It will automatically go to the correct.
Who are my mates?
You will see in the breakout room.
Oh, okay. because I have my smartphone today and I can write in the chat, and I ask to somebody who is more faster in writing. Maybe he can copy and paste what I write in the chat in Mural. This is,
yes,
the problem.
I'm sure that will happen. There are three other participants in the group. So
thank you very much. Maria, sorry about that.
Maria, sorry. I will say that I'm here, I'm listening everything, but unfortunately I can't participate actively because my baby is sick, so
oh,
I with my baby
great to hear.
and so it's not easy to speak and interact, but I'm listening and I'm trying to follow you and also the work activity. But I'm not sure that I can actively participate.
I fully understand. And thank you for your super engagement, trying to follow this course with a sick baby. And let's hope your baby gets well soon. And this is now a perfect example of an adult learner. We have the everyday real life with its challenges and needs as well. So, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's all the best to your baby. Let's hope
thank you
it gets well soon. But yes, as this is a perfect example of a situation of accessibility, we do what we can, and you have the group to support there.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Colleen has a lovely cat there participating as well.
Thank you.
Okay, then I will open the breakout rooms, and you can work till 11, and then we start the break. And please call us for help if you get completely stuck.